Okay, so this evening, rather than the regular program that we have of taking the precepts and giving of a formal talk, we'll be doing putting JR into white, taking Anagarika precepts and training, so that's an opportunity to witness that, and also he'll be taking the precepts. So those who tend to take the precepts, you can just sort of determine them on your own. So, JR, if you'd like to begin by bowing three times and offering
Sambhado Gagava Sovato Pato Aboka Sopambaja Naidam Sukarang Agarang Acha Vasata Ekanta Paripunang Ekanta Parisutang Sankalikitam Brahmacharigam Charitum Yamunaham Kesamasum Oharetva Kasayani Vatani Achadetva Agarasama Nagariyam Pambajayam. The household life is cramped and dusty. The homeless life is free as air. It is not easy, living the household life, to live the fully perfected holy life, purified and polished like a conch shell. Suppose I were to shave off my hair and beard, don the robes of a Buddhist monastic, and go forth from the household life into homelessness.
Okay, so you set the attention to take on the Anagarika training, and it's a first step in going into the homeless life of a samana, a religious seeker in the Buddha's dispensation, so that sense of making that commitment and being able to test the waters of monastic life. It's a opportunity that's worth taking on. You've been here for quite some time, and you've following the training, following the lifestyle, and you'd like to take it further. So that it seems like the appropriate thing to be doing, and you certainly want to do it. So I sort of commend you for that. So that we can go ahead and take these white robes, and then go ahead and switch out your, because it's not jeans and a t-shirt, but it's black and white, and then go ahead and come back and formally take the precepts.
I had to smile at the mind. Suppose I were to shave off my hair and beard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right from the suttas. There. Lifted it right out of the suttas. First shows up in the Samanyapala Sutta. So, second discourse in the Digha Nikaya.
Which the Buddha was referring to himself when he was 29.
Right.
He probably did have a nice an Indian man.
Right.
Full beard. Caucasian, 20-year-old.
21. Okay, you can offer the train. Make the request to receive the precepts.
Aham bhante ti savanena saha atha silani vihachami dutiyampi aham bhante ti savanena saha atha silani vihachami tatiyampi aham bhante ti savanena saha atha silani vihachami.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Ti saraṇa gamanaṃ nititāṃ. Pānātipātā vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
Pānātipātā vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. Adinnādāna vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
Adinnādāna vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
Aparamacharya vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
Aparamacharya vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
I undertake the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity.
I undertake the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity.
Mosavada vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
Mosavada vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech.
I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech.
Surāmeraya majapamādhatāna vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
Surāmeraya majapamādhatāna vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
Vikala bhojana vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ sammādhiyāmi.
Vikala bhojana
I undertake the precept to refrain from eating at inappropriate times. Nacha kita vadita visuka dasana mala kanda vile panadharana mandana vipusanatana vairatmani sikapadang samadhyami.
Nacha kita vadita visuka dasana mala kanda vile panadharana mandana vipusanatana.
I undertake the precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment.
Uccasayana
mahasayana vairatmani sikapadang samadhyami.
Uccasayana mahasayana.
I undertake the precept to refrain from lying on a high or luxurious sleeping place. Immani atta sikapadani samadhyami.
Immani atta sikapadani samadhyami. Imani yata sikapadani samadhyami. Imani yata sikapadani samadhyami.
Silena sugatinyante silena bhoga sambada. Silena nibutinyante tasma silang visota ye.
Sarupante.
Okay, so you've taken the refuges and precepts which constitute the training that you follow, the kind of in terms of the kind of the bare bones, and another part of the training and the requesting for training is to also to take dependence on the teacher, myself, and of course, also is, say, all of these parts of this ceremony are all from things that have been passed on from the time of the Buddha, and that first request is taken from the suttas, that the refuges and precepts are ancient, and the taking of dependence is something that is also at the time of the Buddha, that taking on of making a formal commitment to both to rely on and depend on the teaching training of the teacher, and also the commitment of the teacher to take you on for training, also to pay attention to the requisites, and so that you are able to live the holy life. So you can formally request the taking of dependence.
Acharyo me bhante hohi ayasamato nisaya vachami. Acharyo me bhante hohi ayasamato nisaya vachami. Acharyo me bhante hohi ayasamato nisaya vachami.
Opayikam
sarupante
pati rupang
sarupante
Pasadikena sampadehi
sarupante. Ajateke dani tero maham baro ahapitera sabaro. Ajateke dani tero maham baro ahapitera sabaro. Ajate gedani teo maiham bao aham pitera sabao.
Okay, so you can sit. Okay, so now you've sort of formally taken the refuges, precepts, the taking of dependence that constitutes the taking on of the training for the Anagarika, and on a certain level, your life won't change all that much while you're here. You've been keeping the eight precepts, you've been living, following the monastic routine. But it will change, because it's making a formal commitment, it ups the ante. It's both a commitment to oneself and also doing it in front of the community. It has a certain power to that, and that one has made the commitment to a training. It doesn't really have. I was thinking back to the when I was still living in Thailand, sometimes the Anagarikas would go off to town, and I'd hear back because I knew so many people in Ubon and Warrior, and the Anagarikas were in town, and ice cream in the afternoon. it's like that, where you make this sort of very public sort of commitment to a training and a way of practice, and people sort of, certainly the in-house people know, okay, yeah, JR's, he's an Anagarika now, he's committed himself to a certain training, and so that's it's a good thing, because if we didn't want to do this, we wouldn't request it, and if we didn't want to do this, we didn't see the benefit in it, we wouldn't ask to do it. So that so it's like that. Sometimes you rely on both the inner determination, but then also the external form and the community that's around us to help us to maintain a standard and a consistency of our training, and that's a good thing, because the more continuity we can have in our training and our commitment and our mindfulness and our investigation, then the better results we get from our practice. It's very simple. It's a simple equation. When we apply ourselves to the path of practice that the Buddha gave us, and then the Buddha promises results. And it's a natural result of living within the within a framework of mindfulness, of virtue, commitment to meditation and investigation with wisdom, then the mind really changes, the heart really changes, and for the better. So it's a worthy endeavor, and anything that helps us to keep keep on task is really important. So just reflecting on the that taking of refuge, and really it's something that is very, very fundamental to the to the Buddha's dispensation, that the having a solid refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha is the foundation of our practice, and on a certain level it's also culmination of our practice as we begin to really internalize and penetrate what it means to have a refuge, then the mind really changes. So that when the most common expression of the description of one who is a stream enterer, one who's entered the stream of Dhamma, has entered the foundation of certainty in the Dhamma, is that the characteristics that the Buddha points to most commonly is a confirmed faith and confidence in the Buddha, in the Dhamma, and in the Sangha, and a kind of an unshakable commitment, or a natural commitment to the precepts and to the five precepts, not harming, being honest, being straightforward with virtue. That's the most common description that the Buddha gives. So it's not a small thing to really have a refuge. And you realize that even though intellectually we might have a confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, when our faced with either some kind of challenge or some kind of where attachments really get stimulated, it isn't the Buddha Dhamma Sangha that the mind goes to. It usually goes to greed, hatred, delusion of some sort. It's like the and when people have when they're driving along in a car and all of a sudden there's headlights, it's at night time, and headlights coming straight for them, and you realize, wow, that's not stopping, it's going to hit me. Or the most common expression is the same in airplanes, the recordings in airplanes just before they're going to crash, and that's usually, oh shit. it's like it's not sort of some kind of expression of peace and clarity and having a refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Something a bit different, and a very different mental state. So that having clear refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, there's a stability and clarity that is worthy of working towards, and that's of course what we all take ordination for, whether it's as Anagarika or Samanera or the Bhikkhu precepts. That's the seeking a true refuge, and seeking how to fulfill a path to peace. And again, it's not complicated or abstract. The Buddha gives very, very, very practical, very straightforward ways of training. But the Buddha also recognizes, given the propensity of human beings to create complications and suffering, it isn't that it's easy. So the props are really helpful. So that the precepts, the training, taking of dependence, living in community with other practitioners, so that we can. That's what the idiom that the Buddha uses for those of us living in Sangha and living a life of practice. It's with sort of mutual encouragement and mutual admonition, so that there's times when we'll receive encouraging words and there'll be times when we receive admonishment if it's necessary, so that those are to recognize and to be able to bring everything inwards, and whether one receives encouragement or one receives admonition, how do we bring it in? How do we internalize it? How do we apply it so that we can learn from that? I think of a sutta where the Buddha talks about accomplishment, and so it talks about both failure and accomplishment, and it's sort of and there's, of course, it's in the same areas, but to the area of virtuous behavior in the mind, areas of the mind, and in aspects of view, failure, of course, is when we are not able to maintain a standard of conduct that is has integrity, and it's on a fundamental level. Those precepts around that you just took, not taking the life of any living creature. Not taking what isn't given. In general, it's around sexual misconduct, but taking on a monastic training, then it's keeping that refraining from sexual activity in any way, and then the aspects of speech, refraining from false speech, or refraining from kind of tail bearing or slander, or refraining from harsh speech, refraining from kind of gossip and frivolous speech, and refraining from intoxicants. So those are kind of fundamentals, and when we're committed to that and sustain that, and there's an accomplishment in virtuous behavior, and that virtuous behavior has a result, and the result is, the first fundamental result is non-remorse, and just not regretting actions of body and speech. On the other, another aspect of it is the happiness that comes from conducting oneself with a foundation of integrity. And say, There's a happiness and well-being that naturally arises. And the accomplishment in mind is that's part of the training, of course, in terms of developing mindfulness, developing a reflective investigation of the mind, mental states, moods, and being able to relinquish and, or at least to not be swept up in the moods of the mind that are caught by sense desire, sensual desire, and ill will. Those are just that the mind that swings to desire and aversion, desire. It's just being able to come to a place of clarity and not being swept up in extreme moods. That's an accomplishment. It's not easy to do, and it's something that one can delight in when one experiences that the fruits of not being swept up in those kind of more extreme moods and objects of mind that draw the mind out. So that's part of the training, is just not being drawn out to the world. And the accomplishment in view is really being able to reflect on the aspects of the Buddha's framework for what the Buddha calls right view, or view that is going to lead to well-being and peace. And of course there's in the discourses, there's a set of phrases that the Buddha, they're kind of stock phrases and descriptions of right view. But it's worth reflecting on in the sense of the, recognizing that, because it's, you know, recognizing that there is what's given, there is what's offered, there is the fruits of good karma, there's the fruits of unwholesome karma, there is mother, there is father, there is relationships of goodness that we have. There's this world, there's the next world. There is a cycle of birth and death. And there are beings who have purified themselves. There are beings who have freed themselves. So that's the kind of the stock way of how the Buddha describes it. But I think you're reflecting on the import of that in the sense of recognizing that there is this fundamental law of cause and effect, a law of karma. That's a natural law, and then the results of good and bad actions. There is the kind of relationships of goodness that we need to cultivate. With parents, with teachers, with others who are virtuous. And those are important relationships. That there are people who have understood the world and who have freed themselves of the world. And of course the Buddha is the prime example of that, but it's also it wasn't sort of the the Buddha, and then 2,600 years ago, and then there's been a drought ever since. But it's there's been a continuity of those who have practiced the path and who've reaped the fruits of the practice, and can attest to the efficacy of the path. So that's a fundamental right view, and it's there's a certain tendency to, and it isn't confined to modern times. Even in the Buddha's time, there was kind of doctrines of nihilism and doctrines of you know, there is no there is no results of good and bad actions. Or doctrines where everything is fixed. There's a proper word for that, but I can't think of it.
Determinism.
There's a determinism where that everything is previously determined, and everything is just playing itself out. The image that's used is like a ball of string that you roll it out, and then it's gonna roll itself out as long as that string is there, and then it's done. But the Buddha didn't subscribe to those views, and actually said those are really detrimental because they take away the need for us to be responsible for our actions and to take responsibility for living in the world skillfully, and certainly taking on training as an anagarika that's a taking responsibility and setting yourself up so that you can learn the roots of skillfulness and what leads to peace, what leads to well-being, what leads to some kind of wisdom and understanding. These are having a framework to explore that, within the framework of being a religious seeker, then there is a certain a responsibility that is a bit more pronounced. One just taking on the shaving one's head, wearing white. It's obvious you're doing something different, and taking on a particular framework for deportment and conduct. Actually, something that I forgot to mention in our practice sessions that I should have, is that explained the actual precepts to you, but one of the things that is useful or necessary to take a look at and that you'd be responsible for, or at least some of them, is at the end of the monk's training, there's a collection of minor training precepts, because they're around deportment, they're around eating, they're around different things, and there's 75 training precepts, Sikkhapada, and it'd be good if one of the venerables could point out the it's in the, well, actually you've been looking at the Buddhist monastic code. It's in volume one, and to take and read that. Last year, of course, in the Vinaya readings, and they went over it in detail. But this year, we're going to be doing mostly out of volume two. So to do that on your own, go and take a look at that. If you've got any questions about any of them, then feel free to ask myself or one of the other senior members. It's mostly, you say, just proper etiquette for a religious seeker, and sort of having the good manners of one who is well trained. That's a part of the package of training. Develop a training, then it's reflected in our conduct externally, but it's reflected internally. There's an internal quality of getting grounded in mindfulness and attentiveness, being attentive to the surroundings that one's in, attentive to the conduct that we're involved in, how we behave. There's certain expectations. Externally, but internally it affects us, in that there's a clarity and stability that arises from that continuity. But it also does require that we also train ourselves in the external modes of being a samana. Samana is normally translated a religious seeker, but literally it means one who is peaceful. And so that being able to embody that peace. There's a discourse where the Buddha sees a monk on alms round in a village or town somewhere, and the way it's written is that the Buddha sees that there's a monk who was dissatisfied and distracted. Mm-hmm. So that is probably things weren't going well for him, and so was being drawn out into the either through his own lack of restraint or lack of appropriate conduct. But the Buddha noticed it, and actually is in town, and the Buddha gave him a short admonition, and it was sort of like, don't pollute yourself. The word that is trans, I don't know what it is in Pali, but it's really, don't pollute yourself. Flies gather around things that have a stench. this is very short and to the point. And it's written in the sutta that monk had a, he was able to establish a quality of sangvega, or a commitment to the to dispassion and commitment to the path. And it was sometimes there's no mention of it in the in the discourses, but oftentimes when it's written like that, that's oftentimes an allusion to that particular monastic or the person having some kind of insight. I think if any of us were met the Buddha in town and then got admonished, we'd probably be sobering and clear the mind out, clear the cobwebs out, I think. But then that when the Buddha came back to the monastery and was talking and saying, and people asked him what he meant by that, and he said, "Well, the don't pollute yourself is just not to let those moods and thoughts of sensuality overcome the mind." What was the stench? Any thoughts of ill will or aversion, and again the moods that the mind swings to. What are the flies? He said, "Well, it's just those thoughts that end up dwelling in the states of unwholesomeness, as akusala, unwholesome, unproductive, unskillful." Sort of thoughts or obsession with the thinking mind that goes in that direction. In terms of our training, we have an external form to work with, but we have an an internal aspiration being able to establish the mind in what is consistently wholesome, skillful, peaceful, clear. And it's not always easy to do, but it's a noble aspiration, and it's something that is to be encouraged and supported. And of course, your taking on or training is a way to support that. So I offer my blessings and kind of delight in your intention, and hope that your training bears good fruit. So I offer that for reflection.